Welcome to the Versus History Podcast with your hosts, Patrick O'Shaughnessy, Connell Smith and Elliot Watson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this episode of the Versus History Podcast. We're delighted to have you with us. It's me, Patrick, at History Chappy, your host for today. Thank you to everyone that's been joining us on the podcast and interacting with us on social media at Versus History via all the various platforms. Delighted to have you on the journey with us. Just a reminder, if you like the podcast, please leave us a review and give us a five-star rating. It helps other people to find the podcast and enjoy it the same way that you hopefully are. Well, enough of that and more of this. Today we have another special guest. His name is David Lorday. David, welcome to the Versus History Podcast. Delighted to have you with us today.
Glad to be here.
Well, David, enough of me. I'm the boring one. Tell us about you, Mr. Lorday, your background, and interestingly, what brought an Englishman across the Channel to Paris? Over to you.
I'm not the first, I can tell you.
No, you won't be the last either.
Right. What brought me to Paris? I did French at school and at university. I had a schoolmaster who was incredibly inspiring. And so that was a pretty good background. I then started out. My first job was in journalism with a news outfit. I think everyone knows it's international, Reuters. And pretty soon they posted me to Paris.
Lucky you.
I then went to various other places. Finally, I joined the Economist magazine, which I wrote for quite a long time. And during that time, met a French woman. If you marry a French woman, if you're English and you marry a French woman, you're very wise to live in Paris rather than in London, where I was born. The reason being that the Parisienne, they are prepared to travel all over the world, but there's only one place that they'll live. And this happened to fit in pretty well with my view of things, too. I love Paris, and I've been here for, 30 years.
Très bon. Thank you so much. I know lots of our listeners are like me, are from London. Which part of London are you from, and which school did you go to? Because you mentioned your schoolmaster.
From North London, Southgate, and I went to a school. I went to a school which I'm not sure it still exists. Well, I went to a primary school first of all in Muswell Hill, and then I went to a school called Owens, which was one of the old guild schools. They were the button makers guild of London. You have other schools, haberdashers, etc. The old guilds who formed schools. So that was my schooling in London. My parents moved on to Sussex, which is getting closer to the Channel and very close to the Channel and to France, therefore. And then I went to university after that. And I read French at university, at Oxford University.
Well, that certainly helps if you're going to live in Paris, David. And for the benefit of those that aren't too au fait with England, I'm from South London, South East London, which is not the trendy bit. And David is from North London, the altogether more connected bit with the tube and the subway, and altogether more zany and bohemian and more expensive housing. Anyway, David, your book is about the Siege of Paris, and it's set in 1870. What was happening in Europe at that time? What was the wider context? So if we sort of airdrop you back in history into 1870, what would you be seeing, hearing, experiencing? What did the map of Europe and the world look like? Just over to you, 1870 in a nutshell. Go.
Well, my book is a novel, but it's set in during the siege of Paris in 1870. What was happening was that France and Germany were at loggerheads. They actually went to war for a very silly reason. That was the doing of Otto von Bismarck, who was then not Chancellor, but Prime Minister of Prussia. And you may all have heard of the Ems telegram, where there was a meeting between Wilhelm, the King of Germany, and the ambassador from France. And the telegram arrived in Berlin, and it was doctored by Bismarck, who made it look as though the Emperor of Germany, of France, sorry, Napoleon III, had been deeply had come down and really been rebuked by Germany, and as though Germany had been insulted. And the Emperor Napoleon III was a very sensitive fellow, not very clever, but took umbrage very quickly, and he took this as a sign for war, as a spark for war. 2 days later, he declared war on Prussia. So here we are. But the real reason, of course, was not that. That's a pettifogging reason, which actually put the two into the battlefield. The real reason was that Germany wanted to, Bismarck wanted to unify Germany. This was a huge happening in the European context. France didn't want it to happen and was going to do anything to stop it happening. Just 4 years before this war started, between 4 years before the siege of Paris, Prussia had defeated Austria, the Habsburg Empire, on the field of battle at Sadowa. This was a huge turning point because it meant that the Habsburg Empire was then pretty well out of it for a while, and Prussia was the main force in Central Europe. Meanwhile, Austria had been the patron, sort of godmother, of South German states. And the South German states were sovereign states, independent states. Prussia had to take these in integrate these into Prussia in order to get unification of Germany. And when they were, the South German states, including Bavaria, were cut adrift on the defeat of Austria. France then stepped in, thought, well, no, wait a minute, we can't let this happen. And so took over this, took the South German states, or tried to take them under its wing, which meant to Bismarck that he could only unify Germany if he defeated France. France was just not going to let him do it. That was the reason, the real reason it had been brewing for some time, why war began in July of 1870. And wars, the warring started out in the Rhineland on the eastern borders of France, went on for a couple of months, very brutal stuff, colossal losses on both sides, until suddenly, this was almost, this seemed like a surprise to both sides. The Prussians defeated the Imperial Army, the Imperial French Army at Sedan, which is a border town in eastern France. The French army just collapsed in one day. The Prussians took the Emperor Napoleon III captive. They captured the entire Imperial Army and shipped them off to Germany, and then decided one thing about France that everybody who has been an enemy of France throughout history has known: you can't consider France beaten until you've taken Paris. And so they moved on Paris, and that was the beginning of the siege.
Fantastic. Thanks, David. So, in short, then, imagine you're explaining to an alien that's been dropped on Earth. What was the Siege of Paris that occurred in 1870? I think you've outlined its causes very well, but what actually was it in a nutshell?
Here's what happened. The Prussian army, victorious Prussian army, coming up to 400,000 men, which was almost certainly the largest siege army ever put in the in history, put in the field, advanced on Paris. The Prussian commander, Prussian Marshal Helmut von Moltke, wanted to, he didn't want to attack the city immediately because Paris at that time, this is hard to believe too for many people, Paris was surrounded by ramparts, by very high stone walls, completely surrounding the city. So the Germans decided to, or the German military decided, this is important, it was the military decided to lay siege to the city and starve it out. They thought, even though we've got superiority in numbers, Paris, after all, is a very, very big city. I should add that Paris was a very big city, was the biggest city in the world at the time. It had more than 2 million people. Big city in the Western world, that's for sure. What was happening in China, etc., this was not part of the scene. Paris was the, let's face it, was the capital of civilization. Paris was pretty pleased with itself too. Unfortunately, the after the defeat of the Imperial Army, Paris had very few soldiers left to ward off the Prussian invaders. They had the military governor of Paris had 75,000 approximately soldiers of the line, trained soldiers who knew what they were doing, but many of them were demoralized by what had happened with the defeat of the Imperial Army. It had 100,000 added to that, 100,000 young raw reservists from the provinces who had been sent to Paris some months before. And it also had the sons and fathers of Paris, the bakers, the butchers, the apprentices, the tradesmen, the just the everyday population of Paris. Who formed the National Guard, the Paris National Guard? These were not trained at all. These were real rabble. And they spent most of their time instead of in the barracks, in the bar rooms of Paris. They got they joined because they got 1 franc 50 centimes a day for doing so, which was not much, but enough to get them in there. 300,000 of them, which were probably more a problem than a positive than a, an advantage for the military governor of Paris, whose name was General Louis Trochu. Now, Trochu was not confident. Not only was he not confident, he thought that the Prussian army, Prussian soldiers were invincible. He'd seen what had happened when they defeated Austria, they defeated Denmark before that. He thought they were invincible. And he knew that his own troops would be no match for them. So he was against even trying sorties and breakouts beyond the walls to try and break through the Prussian lines. So this is the, here is the setting at the beginning of the siege.
Thank you very much indeed, then, David. You mentioned your book is a novel, so introduce us, if you will, to one or two of the key protagonists in your book.
Well, the as I say, my book is a novel, so the two protagonists are actually a young English gentleman, might I say, from Victor, this is the Victorian times in London, conventional young Englishman and a radical young Paris woman whom he meets, and they go through the siege. they meet and gradually begin to build up an understanding and love and go through, you see what's happening through them much of the time. The two main characters apart from them are Bismarck, because Bismarck disagreed with what the military was doing, with what the Prussian army's scheme to just lay siege, not attack, and wait and starve Paris out. What the Prussians did, they cut off all communications. They stopped any kind of supplies reaching Paris. So Paris was cut off from the world. You know, of course, the only communications then was the telegraph, which, and the telegraph lines were cut. So Bismarck wanted a very quick victory. He wanted a quick victory because he knew that if they were hanging around for too long, there could be intervention by Britain, by perhaps even a resurgent Austria, perhaps even from Russia, all of whom were decided to be neutral. But nobody liked the idea of Prussia getting this kind of a massive victory over France and being really the top dogs in Europe. And so he was worried that there could be intervention, and he wanted this over as quickly as possible. And he wasn't going to get it by starving the population of Paris out. Now, population of Paris was extremely buoyant. Hard to believe why, but it was. This is Paris was, as I say, a very big city. Paris was pretty pleased with itself. It ate people, you know, it had the restaurants. It ate better than anywhere else in the world. Its place in history was very strong, because this was still, you know, the memories of Napoleon Bonaparte's victories were still there. France considered itself top dog in Europe at the time, and they believed that they were going to beat the Prussians. When it didn't happen out east, the people of Paris thought, we're going to be able to, we're 2 million strong, we're going to be able to beat them off. That didn't happen either. And Bismarck was continually calling for an attack, because he could see that within Paris, although the people were very exultant about fighting the Prussians, making them go away, Paris was a divided city. There was the bourgeoisie, a very strong contingent of the bourgeoisie, and a very strong working class in Paris, which had revolution in mind. When Emperor Napoleon III was beaten out in the east, they wanted to have a revolution immediately within Paris. What happened instead of a revolution was that the moderates, that, well, I think we can call them the bourgeoisie, it was a very bourgeois city, proclaimed the Republic. The empire was dead, and they proclaimed the Republic. This wasn't enough for the revolutionaries. They wanted more. They wanted a total change of the system. So Bismarck was at a bind. He needed to get it quickly, and it wasn't happening quickly. And he and the Marshal von Moltke, who was the commander of the Prussian forces, were in disagreement on this. And they were pretty well, you know, at daggers drawn for a time, until finally, after a first month went by, sweltering heat. This was in September of 1870. A second month went by with a standoff. The French did, despite the sort of diffidence of the commander, the military commander of Paris. They did try some breakouts. None of them worked. The Prussians were very, very strong. Their lines were absolutely unbroken all the way around the city. The third month, Wayne, winter comes, Arctic conditions, the temperature, one of the coldest winters that Paris has ever known, minus 15 degrees. The Seine froze over. The food was running out, had practically run out after 3 months, went on for a fourth month, I think, and still Paris was resisting. And then into the fifth month, finally, Paris had to capitulate because they were simply, it was starved out. But Bismarck had managed to bring it on a little more quickly than it would otherwise have done by bringing in the biggest guns that were then in existence. They were made by the Krupp, the famous Krupp company in the Ruhr. These were a huge monster cannon. He convinced finally von Moltke to bring them up, close them in, get them closer to the walls, and bombard Paris. And the combination of the bombardment and the hunger finally brought about capitulation. So he was Bismarck is a very big character in the book. He is a true character. I use my intuition because I got to know quite a bit about him. I use my intuition to put words in his mouth. I use my intuition to talk about his feelings and his sensations and all this. The other main character is the military commander of Paris, the rather hapless General Trochu, and he's grudgingly agrees to attempted breakouts. Some of them get a little way, but always the Prussians send them back until a very, very large, a massive breakout he agrees to in December. They put out so many people. By this time, they had trained up the guard to a great extent, and they actually sent the guard in with the troops of the line and the reservists to try and break through the lines. The battle went on in eastern Paris on the river, the Marne River, where the Marne flows into the Seine just before the walls of Paris. And the breakout looked as though it might succeed. It went on for 4 or 5 days, but finally the Prussians just knocked it back. After that, it was inevitable that Paris was going to capitulate.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, I would just
Sure, of course.
what was happening in Paris? What was happening in Paris was that it was a huge ordeal. Food ran out fairly quickly. There was, not only they tried rationing for a bit. They had quite a lot of flour which had been brought in for bread, but then bread ran out, and they were using some dreadful mixtures of dross and cotton to make bread. To the famous ordeal of having to eat the rats from the sewers and the stray dogs and the animals from the zoo. They cut up the elephants and the like that. I mean, these are sort of old stories about Paris and what the population went through. They did try to make partially succeeded in making in communicating with the outside world with hot air balloons. Problem with hot air balloons was that you could get them up and high enough to get over the walls without being shot down by Prussian riflemen, but you couldn't guide them. In those days, there was no mastery of guiding aerial contraptions, so they landed anywhere. The idea was that what they wanted to do was to land them in out in the Loire Valley, where some a support force was being put together, and some of them got there. Others landed in Norway. Some landed in Spain, and they landed all over the place. But anyway, these balloons were full of correspondence, official correspondence, and carrier pigeons. And once the carrier pigeons got to wherever they landed, they could, if the pigeons got back to Paris, they did come with messages. So it wasn't totally cut off, but it was almost as good as cut off from the world right throughout.
Thank you very much indeed, David. Okay, the final question from us then. It's about historical significance. So, to what extent or what degree do you think that the Siege of Paris in 1870 can actually be deemed historically significant? So, in other words, if the siege had never happened, would anything be different in history today?
It was enormously significant, more than historians really want to believe. It was enormously significant because what it France had to give up as a result of Paris being captured, they had to give up their prized possessions in Eastern France, which were Lorraine, industrial Lorraine, and Alsace. They became part of the new German Empire, which Bismarck formed as a result of the fall of Paris. French grievances were such over this. The German Empire, by the way, was actually formed in the Hall of Mirrors at Versailles to add to the humiliation of France. The Hall of Mirrors in Versailles was a monument to France's military glories from the Sun King, Louis XIV. So all the French grievances were extremely deep, and it was pretty plain that France was never going to forgive what happened, forget what happened. France needed revenge to become what it wanted to be again. France, it took quite a long time. French prosperity came back fairly soon. There was the Belle Époque, which was a wonderful period for Paris and France too. But this craving for revenge happened, came to a it just broke out finally in the First World War. This was, to my mind, a fundamental source of the First World War. Therefore, because First World War led to World War II, Lenin also, what happened in Paris, I should just as a little aside, what happened in Paris when they did surrender was that the revolutionaries, the Red Revolutionaries, finally took part briefly with the Commune. It didn't last for very long. It ended in civil war. It was a horrible, horrible moment in France. There were 25,000 or more people on the revolutionary side that were killed in Paris, slaughtered by their own people who had. It was a terrible moment. And Lenin looked at that, the Commune, the formation of the Commune, which wanted to do huge reforms. He wanted to free education, wanted to get rid of the church, it wanted to, of the, also, it wanted total equality. Lenin had many of the same ideas. And he used the commune, what happened in the commune, as an inspiration for the Russian Revolution of 1917, not as an inspiration for how to actually carry out the revolution, but an inspiration for how to avoid failing in a revolution. He could see what happened and he avoided all the missteps that the commune took. So, when I say a significant moment in history, yes, to my mind, it was one of the fundamental sources of the great horrors of the 20th century.
Well, it doesn't get more significant than that, David. Thank you very much indeed. Okay, to conclude, could you just tell us the title of the book, who it's published by, and when we can get our hands on it, and in what format?
The book is called, the title of the book is A Time in Paris. I didn't want to, I thought of calling it The Siege of Paris, but there's a book that was written quite some time ago in English called The Siege of Paris. So I didn't just want to get mixed up with that. And A Time in Paris, to me, lets you think about, gosh, so many things can happen in a title like that, A Time in Paris. So let's see. It's published by in London by and in New York by Austin Macaulay Publishers.
Well, thank you very much indeed, David, for giving up
It's
your
a pleasure.
time to come and talk to us. We're overjoyed that you've joined us, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Versus History Podcast. Visit us at www.versushistory.com and follow us at Versus History on Twitter and Instagram. You can download all episodes from iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or from wherever you get your podcasts.